This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yerkew and Peter Scoop Stanton. This is the radio show that will break your neck if your neck needs breaking. And here are the hosts of 7-5 Radio, Walter Yerkew, star of the biggest documentary movie ever made, The 7-5, and Peter Scoop Stanton, who starred in To Catch a Predator.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, one and all. This is Peter Scoop Stanton with Walter Yerkew on 7-5 Radio. Check us out at 75radio.org, the number 75radio.org. We are red hot and rolling this very warm March 29th, 2025. Walt, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well this evening. Happy to be alive. How about you?
I'm very happy to be alive. We got some big news coming on Tuesday, but that's going on the website. But I'll say that for later. Anyways, this portion of 7-5 Radio is sponsored by Mammoth Nation. Go to 75radio.org, click on Mammoth Nation, and do some shopping for your country. We want to welcome all of our special listeners, including Little Billy Keebler and the men and alleged women of the Onondaga Fire Department, also known as Cellar Savers, also New York's finest, New York's bravest, New York's boldest, New York's strongest, those living on Long Island in the 2nd Congressional District. First order of business, as always, we want to remember members of the law enforcement community who were murdered in the line of duty. Tonight, remember Police Officer Osmar Rodarte, of the Marysville, California Police Department, end of watch, March 26, 2025. His killer, thankfully, is DOA. Also, Sergeant Grant Candice of the St. Tammany Parish, Louisiana Sheriff's Office, end of watch, March 23, 2025. His killer is in custody. And tonight, we have two very special guests. We have author and podcaster Ian Trottier, who I had the pleasure to meet at CPAC this year. Also, we have former FBI agent John Donovan, who also I had the pleasure to meet. And they have some earth-shattering news about somebody deeply involved in the deep state who let the terrorist acts occur, and nobody's talking about it. Ian, John, take it away.
Hey, Scoop. Appreciate having us on, and I got John right here with me. Look, just to lay out the foundation here, it was CPAC last year where I set up my podcast table, and a good friend of mine approached me, Scoop, about someone he had been talking to, and it's the fellow that's joining us tonight. Mr. Donovan approached me and had a binder in his hand. He's very formal, wearing a business suit. He looked like an FBI agent. Well, lo and behold, he's a former FBI agent. And, I gave him some time there to record a spot on the podcast. And what John presented to me blew my mind. And I'm thinking to myself, how is it that nobody's grabbing this story right now? And this isn't new business in America. This is old stuff that's been buried, and that is, if you will, it's symbolic of peeling away layers at the deep state. So, what John had done was told me that the former head of the CIA, a man named John Brennan, had allowed various bombings to happen. And this is both domestically and foreignly. So without further ado, I'd like John to present himself and tell listeners exactly the information that he presented and continues to present. And keep in mind as you're listening to John that through an agent in New York, the contents of the research that John presents that I've authored has a contract with Post Hill Press. We're in some legal stalls, and we can get into that scoop later. We're in some legal stalls with their legal department in regards to getting it out to press, but it is under contract. And I was at Mar-a-Lago a week and a half, I suppose, 2 weeks before CPAC of this year. So this story is 2024, and I'm bringing you up to date with the book contract and that sort of thing in 2025. But right now, I was at Mar-a-Lago, Scoop, and I'm I was shooting the breeze, if you will, with Roger Stone. And Roger Stone says, yeah, send me the manuscript. I'm interested in this. Well, he's written the foreword to this. So when this goes to press, it'll have a foreword by Roger Stone. It'll also have a preface by myself, but an introduction by a guy named John Kerouac. And John Kerouac is also a CIA whistleblower. And he's contributed the introduction. And another key element is it will also have a paragraph by a guy named Brooks Agnew, who's a great guy. You can watch him with Nuri. I can't remember the host. He's a very famous host. I can't remember. I don't think of his first name. But Nuri, N-O-R-R-Y, N-O-R-R-Y, on Gaia. Anyway, if you're not familiar with Brooks Agnew. So that's a little bit with that. And getting into a little bit more of what's going on with the research behind John Brennan that John presents. It'll blow your mind. And we're working on getting Kash Patel's attention to get an investigation open on this, and also Pam Bondi's attention. But John, what was going on with your research under open source as you had left the FBI maybe 15, 20 years ago? Ladies and gentlemen, John Donovan.
Thanks, Ian. I appreciate the introduction there. As Ian knows, I actually left the FBI in the year 2000, so I haven't been an agent for 25 years now. However, once trained, you're always trained, right? In 2011, I was an open source intelligence analyst, the person who, for commercial clients, you know, you just look at what's published in the media, what's published online, social media accounts, and you try and draw the information together to come up with a plausible description of what is actually going on. That was my job in 2011. There was a terrorist attack in Norway by a guy named Anders Breivik. He blew up a car bomb to try and kill the Norwegian prime minister, and then he murdered 69 people on an island that was a political convention that was going on the island. And he published his manifesto. I read some of his manifesto. Really, what I was looking for in what he published was his preparation for his attack, because that's what I could report to my clients. I noticed that he actually put his entire preparation diary into his manifesto. And people can go download and see a version of that to this day if they would like to. When I read the manifesto, I read his preparation diary, it became apparent to me, based on my experience when I was an agent, that there was no way U.S. intelligence didn't know about this guy at least 6 months in advance. And I made a report to the FBI about the fact that there was no way that this could have happened without U.S. intelligence knowing. I was able to point out certain data points that would indicate that. And then the next day I was fired for making that report. However, and I wasn't able to work for the next 2 years, which was pretty unfortunate for my wife and my kids. But then I started looking at, well, who would have transmitted this information to the Obama administration from the intelligence community? Who would have been their go-between? And I realized it would have been the National Security Advisor for Counterterrorism. At the time, that was John Brennan. So I st- started looking up everything I could on John Brennan, and made a timeline of everything I could find. And I noticed that in the White House visitor logs, there was a particular individual who visited John Brennan 2 days before the attack, the day before the attack, the day of the attack, then 5 days after the attack, then on two other dates related to this guy Breivik, psychiatric evaluation, and then his trial.
All right. John. Hey, John, well, hold it right there. We'll be right back talking more about John Brennan. This is 705 Radio on Liberty News Radio Network. Take it away.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Bypass the mainstream narrative with Liberty News Radio at libertynewsradio.com. Engage with charismatic hosts live or on demand. We cover the crucial news focused on God, family, and country. News that other networks simply refuse to use. Think of LNR's hard-hitting news and podcasts at your fingertips anytime, anywhere. Join us at libertynewsradio.com. Empower your day with the truth, because the truth will set you free. libertynewsradio.com.
You're back, and Scoop is just getting done staring at Tanilla's Instagram account. Here's more 7-5 Radio.
And we are back. Scoop Stant with Walter Yerke, with Ian Trottier and John Donovan. We're talking about former CIA Director John Brennan and his knowledge of terrorist attacks in Norway. John, was there any terrorist attacks he knew of that were possibly upcoming in the U.S.?
Well, I had to do everything from, it's historical information that I had, I could get access to, right? I didn't have any access to classified information at all, and I didn't have any sources, human sources, that I would ask for this information. So what I found was this particular person was meeting with Brennan in the White House in relation to this Norway attack. So then I queried the White House visitor log for other times that this person who was visiting Brennan may have met up with Brennan. And that's when I saw the pattern was repeated prior to the incident that's known commonly as the underwear bombing in 2009, the guy who tried to blow up a Northwest airline with a bomb that was hidden in his underwear. That guy's name was Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. And then in 2013, I found the same pattern again in relation to the Boston Marathon bombing. So I identified this individual, and I found his LinkedIn page, intelligence analyst, probably detailed over to the National Counterterrorism Center. And as many people may recall, John Brennan used to be the head of the National Counterterrorism Center at the very time that this particular intelligence analyst would have been recruited to work there. So I was thinking, oh, maybe John Brennan recruited this inexperienced intelligence analyst, whom I consider a victim in this whole operation, because, you know, here he is, he's being asked to provide information to, you know, the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States. That's a very heady responsibility for an intelligence analyst. So I can see him being very willing to do whatever he could to help out. However, I also looked up how John Brennan set up the National Counterterrorism Center, and he ensured that the Counterterrorism Center had very specific authorities vis-a-vis all the other intelligence agencies. For example, an intelligence analyst at the Counterterrorism Center could open up code word compartment files and then order any other intelligence agency to send information to that code word compartment. For example, if the NSA picked up information on Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab prior to his attack, the intelligence analyst could tell the NSA, oh, I'm opening up a code word compartment. You need to send all the data on that guy that you collect to this compartment, and you need to label all of this information in your NSA files as being sent to a code word compartment, which would mean that no one else would be allowed to look at that data unless they had permission from the intelligence analyst. So even the NSA would not be allowed to look at its own data that it collected once it was labeled to go into a code word compartment, which is a really clever way to sequester information away from the rest of the intelligence community if you don't want anyone to stop this particular guy from blowing up an airplane.
But John, why would Brennan or the intelligence analyst want to sequester some information?
Now, there are legitimate reasons to sequester the information. Say the CIA was going to try and recruit Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. They would then want a code word compartment opened, and that would be very understandable by everybody in the intelligence community, right? It seems very legitimate. It gives plausible deniability, right? Because, oh, we're going to try and recruit this guy. So there's the plausible deniability part. So I saw that with Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab. I saw it with Brennan, with Breivik, and then I saw it with Tsarnaev prior to the Boston Marathon bombing. So, then I was like, well, what would be the benefit to Brennan to allow these bombings? That doesn't make any sense.
So wait.
And so,
John,
looking into.
John, not to interrupt. So you're saying that John Brennan had prior knowledge before these actions of these bombings, these terrorist attacks?
Yes, because the NSA would have collected all of these people's, of these three terrorists, their online activity would have been collected by the NSA. Now, why do I say that it all should have been collected, but then there's no evidence it was collected? After the underwear bombing and after the Boston Marathon bombing, the intelligence community OIG and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, they conducted reviews of the incidents, all right? And in their published report, they said they reviewed all U.S. government databases and found no references to either Abdulmutallab or Tsarnaev prior to the attacks. That's absurd that there wouldn't have been collection. All right. And I showed Ian, I gave Ian a lot of examples of taken from like the FBI published records related to Abdumatalov and Tsarnaev, where they show this was signals intelligence stuff that the Russians collected. You mean to tell me that the Russian signals intelligence is better than the NSA's signals intelligence of electronic communications that originated in the United States? No way, no how.
But and then John, not to interrupt. So I'm trying to comprehend here because my Catholic education was obviously showing. So you're saying that John Brennan, the director of Central Intelligence, knew about these attacks but had all this information, all this data stored away so people couldn't look it up?
Correct. Yes.
They hid it from the FBI Guardian assessment prior to the Boston Marathon bombing.
Well, why would he do that? I mean, isn't his job is to let people know, hey, we have this intelligence, this might happen.
That's why this is likely, if once this gets out and published, this will likely be a top five media story of the year, in my opinion, once it gets out and published. Go ahead, John.
So that was my question. What would it personally benefit Brennan to allow this? Well, Brennan, he had a career in the CIA. His last position was as the director of the National Counterterrorism Center. And then he retired in 2005 and went to work for a company called the Analysis Corporation. He was the CEO of the Analysis Corporation. He was specifically hired to help the Analysis Corporation spin off from its parent company and have an initial public offering of stock sales. While he was CEO of the Analysis Corporation, he was awarded 25,001 shares of stock. That stock was kept in his Analysis Corporation 401k account. That's where the stock was held. Then John Brennan left the Analysis Corporation, went back into government service as Obama's counterterrorism national security advisor, and filled out his executive financial disclosure form. On the form, he listed the Analysis Corporation 401k, and the value of it was more than $50,000. That's what he put on the form. An Office of Government Ethics representative went over the form with him, and that representative put a handwritten note on that form. And that note says, per John Brennan, he's going to roll over this particular 401k into an IRA. The law that governs rolling over a 401k to an IRA requires the person doing it to liquidate all the assets in the 401k, turn it into cash, and the cash gets transferred over into the IRA. All right? That's the law. That's what John Brennan told this person he was going to do. Right. Then
So, John, Brennan retires from government service, gets a job in the private corporation, then gets rehired back under the Obama administration. So then he has to liquidate his assets for his 401k?
Legally, yes, so that he would not have a conflict of interest.
All right. Well, we're coming on the halfway. All right, John, hold that thought. We're only halfway through figuring out what's coming on with what's going on, John Brennan. Anyways, when we come back, we'll have Walter ask some questions. Stay tuned, everybody.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. A climbing death toll in Southeast Asia.
Come on in.
Dozens of patients lined up in beds or seated on the ground outside a damaged hospital in Myanmar's capital following Friday's devastating 7.7 magnitude earthquake. The country's ruling military says on state TV the confirmed death toll is now past 1,600, but rescue workers are pulling more bodies out of the rubble. In neighboring Thailand, authorities in Bangkok say the number of confirmed dead is at least 10, but dozens of people are still unaccounted for. I'm Donna Water.
Also at townhall.com, U.S. states are positioning themselves to compete for newer, cheaper nuclear reactors being developed as communities and tech giants compete in a race for electricity. Here's correspondent Bernie Bennett with more on that story.
For some state officials, nuclear is a carbon-free source of electricity that helps them meet greenhouse gas reduction goals. Others see it as an always-on power source to replace an accelerating wave of retiring coal-fired power plants. 25 states passed legislation to support advanced nuclear energy last year. This year, lawmakers have introduced over 200 bills supportive of nuclear energy. The reactors have high-level federal support, and utilities across the U.S. are working to incorporate the energy source into their portfolios. Bernie Bennett reporting.
Authorities say at least one person has been killed when a small plane went down and crashed into a house in a Minneapolis suburb. A Brooklyn Park spokesman says the dead person was aboard the plane. Residents of the home were not hurt, but the house was destroyed. Prosecutors in California say county deputies in San Bernardino involved in a shootout will not be facing charges. More on these stories, townhall.com.
Are you a writer who's devoted to...
You hear the term living better. What do you think about? More money, a bigger house, maybe a yacht? What about how you feel physically? How do you wake up each day? How do you sleep during the night? What activities you can and cannot do? When you feel good, life is good. So if pain is affecting your life, see how Relief Factor can help. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally, developed by doctors. It doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or even eliminate pain. How do I know? Absolutely, am a customer. I take Relief Factor daily. No lower back pain for me anymore. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Give their three-week quick start a try. It's only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. Just one phone call, 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor, relief wherever you're hurting. In 3 weeks or even days, Relief Factor can give you a chance to rediscover the true meaning of living better again. Visit ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. That's 800-4-RELIEF for the one and only Relief Factor.
Being there with your child and being there for your child are two completely different things. One denotes a simple presence, which is a start, but can also be accomplished by someone other than you.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
See, that sheep did a fine job of being there with the child, but it didn't do a very good job of being there for the child. Now listen to the difference an involved parent can make.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
I'm not very good at algebra, but do you have any English questions? Because I done real good in English.
Oh, Mom.
Okay, let's take a look.
Okay, so the algebra problem didn't get solved, but something better happened. Mom was there for her child. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
you're still listening? Here's more 7-5 Radio.
And we are back. Scoop Stanton with Walter Yerkue. Our guest tonight is Eon Trottier and John Donovan. You need to check out highstakestreason.com. That's highstakestreason.com. Apparently, former CIA director John Brennan knew of terrorist attacks in Boston, in Norway, and did nothing about it. I know you got some questions, comments, and concerns for a guest. Take it away, sir.
Well, just first of all, thank you to the gentleman for coming on this relatively unknown show that we're trying to build. As far as this John Brennan goes, I remember, 15, 16 years ago or so when Obama took office, and Brennan was pretty critical about George W. on his stance about torture and waterboarding and things of that nature, trying to get information out of the people that we caught and put down at Guantanamo. I'm all for waterboarding. You catch a bad guy like that, it's open season, because that person, if you didn't catch him, he'd kill you. He's very hypocritical about the Republican, the way Republicans handle things. And back then when George Bush was in the White House, it was real sticky. The guy never really got to be president because of the idiot of Bin Laden, wiping out the Trade Center and the Pentagon and such like that. It was just horrible. But he was very critical about it. And that all ended in George Bush's lap. And he did the best he could with what he had. But when John Brennan came back into government, via our Hussein, Obama, he, again, more hypocriticalism of everybody else, and he was always doing the right thing. But then again, they missed, you were talking about Abdul Farouk, with the underwear guy, which, by the way, took balls to put a bomb in your underwear. But he missed it. They missed it. Why did he miss it? Because he was too damn hypocritical of what everybody else was doing wrong or what he said was doing wrong. Now, John Brennan's, long gone. He's retired. But his legacy is that he was a screw-up. He was head of the CIA for, 4 years of the second Obama term. And he really didn't do much during those 4 years, except badmouth everybody else. Especially when the Don came in 17, he was, at the top of the list of screaming that Trump sucks, which, I think he lived to regret. But my question would be, when John Brennan came back, he didn't want to be the CIA director. But then I guess they talked him into it, because I don't think he thought Obama was going to get a second term. But once he got that second term, boy, he was all up Obama's behind. And, just like Michelle. and they became so tight that everything became secret again, which is fine, because we pay these people to be, espionage spy thing, that's fine, that's part of the world. My question is, why would Obama take this guy in, because he apparently, if I remember right, he was in the war room, where they call it, the war room, when Osama bin Laden was getting killed. He was in there with him and Hillary and I can't remember the Department of Defense Secretary back then. Why would he put this man, who really has a track record of going from place to place, criticizing everybody that works for him? That's why he went from place to place. He was with 3 or 4 different private agencies before they brought him back into Obama's. Why would Obama hire such a person that didn't like underlings, is what I'm trying to get? Because then you don't get information, or you don't know how to get the information. Why would he hire a guy like that? It's my opinion that you know, he's, you know, overbearing and micromanaging. But he really needed somebody to micromanage him. Why would Obama hire somebody like that?
Yeah, and Walter, first off, I don't think he's long gone. They just revoked his security clearance and banned him from federal buildings. So he's still lurking. He may not be active in CIA operations, but you know, he's obviously still a threat to some degree. But John, why don't you go ahead and answer that question?
Sure. Brennan was Obama nominated Brennan to be head of the CIA during his first term. The Senate said no because of the torture that went on at Guantanamo Bay. And so then Obama made him National Security Advisor for Counterterrorism, which is where I saw his White House visitor log meetings with this particular intelligence analyst. Then I looked up, as I was saying earlier, Brennan had this stock that he was supposed to sell. He didn't sell it. He did not roll it over into an IRA. He just changed the name of the 401k on his subsequent financial disclosure forms. He held on to the stock. Prior to the stock having an IPO, the initial public offering, the number of shares that John Brennan had was increased to 200,000 shares of stock. Then when there was the IPO, the stock was valued at about $12 a share and then settled out at about $10 a share. So his 200,000 shares was now worth $2 million. Then in April of 2011, the company, the follow-on, the successor company to the Analysis Corporation, which was called Sotera Defense Solutions, it was taken private by a multinational corporation at $24.25 a share. So now John Brennan's 200,000 shares are worth $4.85 million. Every time there was a successful attack against the United States, the public clamored for the Congress to increase the funding for counterterrorism, which sent more money to this indispensable government contractor. Now, why was the Analysis Corporation, Sotera, indispensable? They owned the terrorist tracking database. Anyone in the intelligence community that wanted to track a terrorist had to put a query into that company, and they made money off of that.
Jeez.
So that's why John Brennan wanted these terrorist attacks to succeed. It increased the value of his stock market portfolio.
So
all of that stock was kept in his 401k.
So you're saying John Brennan kept information hidden from other people in the intelligence law enforcement community. So when an attack in America does go down, then people want more intelligence. So then they go after. So then they contract to his company that he has a vested interest in. So he gets money out of that.
That's correct. But even more Scoop and Walter, even more to the point, is that there is a British interest in this company. John, can you talk about that?
Sure. A guy named Damien Pearl, who is a very successful British private military contractor in Iraq, he made a lot of money and he wanted to buy the Analysis Corporation and take it public. He buys it, and Brennan now becomes a board member of Damien Pearl's company in the UK. Damien Pearl, former Royal Marine, with a lot of connections with MI6 and the British intelligence services. Where did the whole Russian collusion hoax begin? In London, with the help of British intelligence. So you see that they were doing this stuff against Trump. One of the reasons was because it protected Brennan and his co-conspirators. Like two other people who were on the board with Damien Pearl. One was the former chief of station in London. I think his name was Jack Devine. And there was another former CIA guy who was a former deputy director who was also on the board of directors of this Analysis Corporation, Sotera Defense Solutions. And they also made a lot of money off of this. Oh. And we find out that the Russian collusion hoax starts in England using British intelligence to make up crimes against Trump to cover up this.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. More about John Brennan. John. Stay tuned, everybody.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Cybercrime is exploding. Take Sarah from Sweet Delights, whose world crumbled after having to close with not being able to bounce back. Small businesses are prime targets, but the right strategies can keep yours safe. Jay Hill, CEO of Network Providers, has co-authored The Cyber Playbook Simplifies Cybersecurity for Business Owners with Strategies to Avoid Costly Breaches and Fines, Build a Strong Cyber Attack Response, Secure Your Business with Key Protections. Cyber threats aren't slowing down, but you can stay ahead. Protect your business. Ensure its security for tomorrow. Get the Cyber Playbook today at networkprovidersinc.com/cyber-playbook or call 385-446-5500 now.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
This is 7-5 Radio with Walter Yuku. I mean, Walter Yurkow. I mean, Walter Kiwi. Here's Walton Scoop.
And we are back. A couple of housekeeping notes. During that commercial for Ask an Immigrant, I was looking at the Instagram account of our favorite immigrant, Danella Rodriguez. Follow her at Danella Rodriguez with an S dot model on Instagram. Also, Tuesday, check out 75radio.org. We have a big announcement on Tuesday. Only I know about it. Also, next week will be our 7th anniversary show. And we will so far it'll be me and Walter, but check it out. But anyways, back to this show. We have Ian Trottier and John Donovan just opening a can of worms on John Brennan. The guy kept information about terrorist attacks, did nothing about it. And the company that was contracted out to do signal intelligence was partially owned by Brennan. Well, you got any questions, comments, concerns? Because this is groundbreaking.
So, you know, what we're talking about is, you know, he knew about ahead of time that there was going to be a Boston Marathon bombing. He knew ahead of time that something was going to happen. He knew, you know, he says he didn't, they missed, you know, the underwear guy. You know, what else did he know about that he benefited from?
Well, that was the Norway attack that John hit on. You want to go a little bit more into that, John?
Yeah, as I said earlier, the bomber in Norway, Anders Breivik, he published his preparation diary. And I did an analysis of the key phrases that he put in his preparation diary that he was looking online to find information about, because he didn't know how to build a car bomb. He had no military training, no police training, no scientific training. So he Googled how to make a car bomb. And he spent 200 hours over a two-week period looking up every single possible phrase, you know, for what the chemicals were, where to buy them, where to use them, how to process them, all that stuff. And then he used the internet to order his chemicals and have them delivered to his personal residence. He bought the chemicals using his true name, his personal credit card, and had them delivered to his home. And nobody spotted that he was collecting all these things. Now, that was in 2011. Edward Snowden comes out in 2013 and reveals a lot of NSA information. One of those things that he revealed was that by the year 2008, 2 years prior to Breivik Googling for terrorism, the NSA claimed that they had 100% coverage of all internet activity in Norway. Well, if they had 100% coverage of all internet activity in Norway by 2008, then in 2010, when Breivik is Googling, you know, what chemicals to buy to make a 1,000-pound car bomb, they collected all that. Well, where did it go? How come it didn't show up anywhere? How come nobody told Norway, hey, there's a guy who's planning to assassinate your prime minister and murder all the children on this island? That was all. The only explanation I could think of was there must have been a code word compartment opened up, and the NSA had to dump all that data into it, and the NSA was not allowed to look at it once they set up the collection mechanism. You know, you set up an algorithm saying, hey, anybody from this IP address who puts anything online, everything has to go into this code word compartment. And in our files, we're going to mark it as it's in a code word compartment. So if anyone goes to the NSA and says, do you have anything on this, on someone planning to do something like this? The NSA's only legal answer they can give them is, no, we don't have anything. Because they don't have authority to tell someone that there's a code word compartment that's hiding all this information. That's the way security protocols work. So Brennan, knowing how the security protocols work, he uses this intelligence analyst at the Counterterrorism Center as a cutout to set up these code word compartments and then not share the information with the people who should have gotten it. And the Intelligence Community Office of Inspector General and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence both published reports saying, we checked all U.S. government databases and found no information on Tamerlan Zarayev. Well, that's the same thing that happened with this guy Breivik. So there wasn't – that's how I believe that they did it. Do I have any proof? The only proof I have is – that these published reports say they couldn't find any when they looked for it. Well, if you don't have a need to know, then the intelligence analyst doesn't need to tell you. And who determines right. whether or not you have a need to know? The intelligence analyst who controls the compartment. It's a perfect setup to sequester data away so that you can ensure terrorist attacks occur and no one can catch you doing it.
Right.
Now, and stock prices rise.
Right. Now, gentlemen, one thing that we want or we need to have is proof. Just before the Saturday before the inauguration of Donald Trump, we had a story of 1,000 Al-Qaeda terrorists in the U.S., and we had to verify that story, and we were correct a couple months later. But, you know, this is very interesting that John Brennan is withholding information so he gets rich off of a company he has a vested interest in. Do you have any proof that he does have a vested interest in this company and he did withhold information concerning terrorist attacks?
So what we have are SEC documentation. We have the Obama ethics waiver. Obama signed an ethics waiver granting Brennan this waiver of having financial connections, which is obviously contradicts what SEC statement shows. And John, correct me if I'm wrong. And but the real nuts and bolts, and I'm going to let John explain this, but the real nuts and bolts of what would be considered evidence, what we hope this book delivers to Americans and to people around the world, of course, especially in Norway, what we hope is that this serves as in what's called an articulable predicate. So it serves as circumstantial evidence enough to get Kash Patel to open an investigation on this, because the actual proof will, of course, be in these code word compartments in the NSA. John, go ahead and describe the question here.
Sure. As I looked into Brennan and his connections with this Analysis Corporation, I noticed that after this underwear bombing back in 2009, Brennan had received an ethics waiver from the president to participate in the after-action investigation of how this guy got on the plane with a bomb in his underwear, okay? And in that ethics waiver, the president, President Obama, specifically says of primary importance is the fact that you no longer have a financial interest in the Analysis Corporation. That was demonstrably false, because John Brennan, according to documents that are publicly available from the SEC, he still owned stock in that company when he was issued this ethics waiver. All right, so there's a false official statement that John Brennan caused to be made. He made false official statements on all of his financial disclosure forms, because he told the Office of Government Ethics he was going to roll this over into an IRA. He didn't do it. He just changed the name of the account on his subsequent financial disclosure forms. So the financial disclosure forms show that he still owned this 401k that he promised he was going to get rid of. And the only thing that was in that 401k is stock in the company. There were no other assets until April 2011, okay? And then the assets were cash in that. So the SEC documents prove that he did own this stock. His financial disclosure forms proves that he continued to own the stock. And we also have evidence that the NSA must have collected this internet information, especially on this guy Breivik, but also on Tamerlan Tsarnaev and on Abdulmutallab.
Right.
And yet,
all right,
we have
John,
two other government agencies saying we couldn't find
John.
Them.
John, we reached the end. For Walter Yerkew, this is Peter Scoop standing to remind you, you can make a difference. Go out and make it. See you next week, 7 years on the air. Take it away, boys.
This is James Edwards for 7-5 Radio. For those who work the streets and the jails, thanks for keeping us safe. So long, everybody.